Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
Topping the news this hour, quake victims sleep out in the open. I'm Frances Alonso reporting from Washington. A powerful magnitude 6.7 aftershock shook the Kathmandu area of Nepal Sunday, a day after a massive earthquake killed more than 2,200 people and leveled buildings. Many are spending the night outdoors in open areas. This victim says it's for his own safety.
Today, big problem in my place, so that I am coming here for save my life.
Meanwhile, medical personnel are joining the others in the open areas to treat the injured.
So basically, we have come here because we have a hospital out there, but it's very unsafe. So that's why we have some patients that are here. So that's why we have come here for the rounds. And because of the severe sequence of the after quakes, most of the people, they are very afraid of getting into their houses. So they are living in this open area.
Meanwhile, disaster response teams from the United States and other nations are deploying to help search, rescue, and recovery efforts. To the east, avalanches shook Mount Everest, killing at least 17 climbers, injuring others, and burying entire base camps. You can read more details on the quake at voanews.com. Fighting raged through Yemen Sunday with jets from the Saudi-led coalition attacking Houthi-held positions near the presidential compound in the capital of Sana'a, and ground clashes erupting in Aden. Witnesses reported at least five airstrikes on arms depot at a military base on the outskirts of Sana'a. Voting is underway in Togo, where President Faure Gnassingbé is hoping to remain in power. Meanwhile, special observers have descended on Togo to monitor the election. VOA News. Police in Burundi's capital, Bujumbura, clashed Sunday with protesters demonstrating against President Pierre Nkurunziza, who is seeking a controversial third term. As you hear here, those clashes erupted as police fired tear gas to break up the crowds and prevent them from entering the city center. Witnesses say several people have been wounded while dozens of others were arrested. Suspected Boko Haram militants have attacked a Niger army base on an island in Lake Chad, leaving many soldiers there dead. The military sources in Niger say hundreds of armed militants riding on motorized canoes attacked the island of Karamga early Saturday morning. However, the number of casualties was not released, according to officials that say the military might have suffered heavy losses. Rights groups are urging Indonesia to abandon plans to execute 9 convicted felons, including 2 Australian drug traffickers. We have more on that story from Phil Mercer in Sydney.
Australians Andrew Chan and Myuran Sukumaran could have only days to live. The ringleaders of the so-called Bali Nine, a group of young Australians convicted of drug smuggling, have been on death row since 2006. They've now been given 72 hours notice of their executions by Indonesian authorities, although an exact date has yet to be set. Despite diplomatic pressure from around the world, Indonesia appears intent on carrying out death sentences on the 2 Australians, along with citizens from Brazil, Ghana, Nigeria and the Philippines. United Nations Chief Ban Ki-moon has appealed to Indonesia to spare the group from execution. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Syrian fighter jets bombarded the northern city of Jisr al-Shagur on Sunday, a day after the Nusra Front and its allies seized it for the first time in the 4-year conflict. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said at least 4 airstrikes hit the city. The Philippines foreign minister Sunday told his counterparts from the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations, or ASEAN, that China is poised to take de facto control of the South China Sea through its reclamation work on disputed reefs there. The Philippine Foreign Affairs Secretary Albert Del Rosario told the ASEAN foreign ministers meeting that the group should tell China that what it's doing is wrong and that the work there should be immediately stopped. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani starts a visit to New Delhi on Monday and is expected to see India reach out to the country's new leader. The leader there has been cementing links with India's rivals, Pakistan and China. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
There were almost no reserves to speak of. Now we have close to $1 billion. US dollars, about 600 something in the reserve bank.
Malawian President Peter Mutharika aims to improve the living conditions of citizens before the end of his first term.
The relationship is warm, and there are elements in our region that want to divide us, between Kenyans and Somalis.
Somali Foreign Minister says his country enjoys warm diplomatic relations with neighboring Kenya despite complicated issues of refugees.
It does look like elections may go through if there is peace and security in the country, which is the big question right now.
And Burundian protesters are killed after demonstrating against President Pierre Nkurunziza's third-term bid. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Faced with a major financial scandal that depleted the Malawian state coffers, President Arthur Peter Mutharika says he implemented cost-saving measures to save the country funds as well as boost the economy. He denied reports that corruption is endemic in his country, but Professor Mutharika expressed his commitment to weed out corruption. In part two of our interview with him, President Mutharika told me that he wants to leave a legacy of a happy Malawian people with improved living conditions at the end of his first term.
When I entered government, there was absolutely nothing in the government. It was a challenge. The input cover was only 3 weeks. It's now almost 6 months, the input cover. There were almost no reserves to speak of. Now we have close to $1 billion U.S. dollars, about 600-something in the reserve bank, and about $3 million something in the private banks and bureaus. Total about $1 billion. That never happened. The highest accumulation in the history of Malawi called $1 billion, and I hope that we can double that within a year. So I'm excited about that. The Kwacha has not stabilized. Mm. I think I followed that.
Now, Mr. President, you came to office with cash gates, scandals, people stealing the people's money, embezzlement, financial malfeasance, and all that.
Correct.
What is your commitment to weeding out graft in Malawi? Because a lot of Malawians says that corruption is endemic.
Well, I don't think it's endemic. It's certainly institutional, and to some extent is structural. On the issue of corruption, I'm very serious about it. When I took office, I removed the director of the Anti-Corruption Bureau. Mike took a lot of criticisms, and I put a person who's an expert on money laundering, expert on fraud, had 18 years here in Virginia, in Joyce and Touche. Right. Had 18 years of experience, a highly qualified man. So I put him there. His deputy is a lawyer. And the SB, it alternates. Either the director is a lawyer, the deputy is a financial person, vice versa. This time the deputy is a lawyer. He's doing a wonderful job. He knows how to trace all these things. I also removed the director of public prosecution and put a new director because I wanted seriousness. And we increased the budget of the Anti-Corruption Bureau by 168%. Mm-hmm. This has to show that we are serious. And we asked assistance from the British government. They sent us two experts, one in the Ministry of Trade, Ministry of Justice, to trace who knows, expert on fraud and so forth. And another one, the second one at the Anti-Corruption Bureau, who is also involved in assisting the director. So I put all the mechanisms in place. Investigations are going on. Some very senior people have been indicted. When I was leaving, the accountant general was arrested. Investigations are continuing, and we expect them to lead wherever they may lead. So we're very serious about this. I undertook to uphold the law. and the constitution when I saw Edward North of office. So I'm doing that.
You know, the international donors that support Malawi's budget withheld some funds because of lack of what they said, transparency and all that. It, you know, you have been doing a good job. Do you think by what you have done, that would unlock the funds that have been withheld from your budget?
Yeah, I would hope so. As you know, the donors provided bank support of 40% of the current budget. 40%. They withdrew that. So for the last 11 months, we have been operating on our own with no donor support. Use our own resources, proper collection, cutting back on spending, travel, and all those kinds of things. Well, money, for example, I used the cabinet, eliminating 70 ministries.
Right.
We want to have 18 ministries, cutting off 20, including the president and vice president. That alone saves us 20 billion over 5 years, mm-hmm. which is about 50 million US dollars,
right.
which by economy is a lot of money. I also cut back travel, proper management, ministers, everybody, including myself, and that's saving us 70 billion kwacha in 5 years. Mm. That translates into about 175 million US dollars.
Right. Mr. President, finally, if I may ask you, what should the people of Malawi be looking ahead for after your first term expires? What should they say?
Well, good. I want them to say that in 2019, when my first term expires, they're better off than they were in 2014 when I took office. I think that will be the key, because if you look at my website, I talk about the concept of happiness. You know, the American idea of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I think underlying any government activity is the idea that you should make your people happier. Whether they have better food, they'll be happier. If they wear better clothes, they'll be happier. If they have a better house, they'll be happier. Drive a better car, they'll be happier. If they have good medical service, they're happier. So that's the responsibility. Lead a nation of happy people, not a nation of sad, angry, and discouraged people. So at the end of the 5 years, I would hope that people see that Malawi got better, their lives got better in terms of their personal lives and their incomes, and other social instruments that make life comfortable. They'll be do that, and then they'll see more infrastructure development in the country. I think that's what they will say. We have accomplished the first 5 years.
Thank you very much, Mr. President.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika is the Malawian president. He spoke with me from the nation's capital. Ghana is facing a challenge meeting power consumption to meet both industrial and domestic needs. This has affected industries as well as the country's economy. My colleague Lenore Modu caught up with Ghana's Deputy Finance Minister Kessel Atobah-Forson to talk about the anticipated opportunities the power sector difficulties provide investors.
The challenges that we talk about, obviously the power sector relate to generation and it relate to distribution. One, we have a shortfall in generation. And two, we have a situation whereby the distribution distribute, and then obviously as a result of the past subsidies and as a result of some of the bills that the state normally owns to the state, sometimes they have a difficulty. And the fact that the distribution companies themselves will have to work to ensure that, yes, they can actually correct what they have or what they have, the MDAs have spent or the private companies have actually spent in the form of the power that they've consumed becomes a major challenge. But overall, we've been able to unlock that. Going forward, we've looked at transforming the power sector. And doing that, what we've said is that clearly, one, we're looking at opportunities whereby we unlock the potentials. One, in areas of generation, what we are saying is that we are actually attracting private sector to come into generation. Before you attract private sector to come into generation, then the distribution must be right. They have to make sure that indeed, after they distribute to the company that is actually in charge of distribution, they will be able to get their money to pay them. Okay, and the right price being actually given to them, being the tariff by the PULC, is actually what the person is actually paying for, and that indeed their business will become actually profitable, and in terms of cash flow, they'll be there to be able to support the operations. So we are working around it, and we believe that is something that overall the state will benefit, working around the constraints to power thanks to MCC. We are working very close with MCC, working very close with other development partners, and we believe that these constraints, as we see, will be transformed into something that is good for the country.
Now, can you elaborate a little bit on the opportunities that the Ghana Compact present?
The opportunities the Compact actually presents is the fact that the Compact will unlock the constraints to the growth actually in the power sector. So they are not only throwing money at it, okay? They are bringing on board the private sector and bringing on board efficiency in the power sector. So these are some of the things that we are looking at. The efficiency in the private sector in the end will benefit the economy. The fact that to create jobs, to grow the economy, the fact that in terms of national budget, there will be revenue flowing in. These are some of the things that we're working on. So opportunities are enormous if we are to get it right. And I believe that we have the right partner as long as the MCC is concerned, and we believe that we'll be able to unlock.
Finally, I wanted to have your take on the role of the consumer when it comes to power, because a lot of times consumer complain when there's power outage. Well, we understand that the government has a role to play to ensure that the population has electricity. What is the role of the
consumer? I think the consumer's role is to pay the right tariff and ensure that it pays its right on time. Because what is important that is sorted out. In my view, I'm of the view that in my country, the consumer, what it cares about is the fact that you have power available and is ready to pay. So the role is clearly defined, and I believe the consumer will perform as part of the bargain.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Kessel Atubah Forson is the Ghanaian Deputy Finance Minister. He spoke with my colleague Lenore Mudu here in Washington. Somalian Foreign Minister Abdul Salam Omer says his country has a warm relationship with neighboring Kenya, which has provided troops to fight al-Shabaab. He said there are elements that want to divide the countries and Africa by pitting nations and religions against each other. Omer told me Saturday that he was not bothered by reports that Kenya is considering building a wall along its border.
I thought there is a recent agreement over refugees, not disagreement. The relationship is warm, and there are elements in our region that want to divide us, between Kenyans and Somalis. They want to divide us between Muslims and Christians, and there has been atrocities committed that has been committed in Somalia for the past 5-6 years. Now it's being committed against the Republic of Kenya and the Kenyan people. So we are in a turbulent time, but the relationship is warm, maybe a little bit fuzzy.
Kenya, we hear, want to build a wall between Somalia and Kenya because of the security issues that the country faces at the moment. Will that undermine the warm diplomatic relations the two countries have enjoyed over the years?
No, I think every country has the right to do what they want with their territory and build whatever they want to. The question that may be pertinent to me is, would it solve the problem? Because we in Somalia, we believe that the boundaries should be open. East Africa and the Horn of Africa should trade. People should crisscross and exchange cultures and exchange education. And we need the human resources of Kenya to come and help us rebuild Somalia. Kenyans were good to Somalis when we needed them most. A lot of businesses thrive. A lot of refugees are there who get a protection. So I think there is a lot of goodwill and good relationship to build on rather than to divide.
Well, what is the partnership between your country and Kenya in fighting terrorism, especially since both countries faces or face the threat of Al-Shabaab?
Well, the biggest partnership that we have and you could have is that Kenyans send their young men and women to help dispel Al-Shabaab from Kismayo and Barawe and other places in the Juba Valley. That's a major contribution to the fight of this immense of regional to liberate from the region and from the globe. I think we need to do more information sharing, and I think we need to be doing more talking and more surveillance and work with our partners, with the United States, with the Europeans, Ethiopians, Djibouti, Burundians, the Ugandans are there. So you can ask more for people who send you their children to defend.
What is the current position of your government in terms of taking the fight to Al-Shabaab? Because recently they've attacked certain aspect of the capital, Mogadishu, and some of your colleagues were even killed. How strong is the Somali army right now, backed by the African Union or AMISOM, to combat Al-Shabaab in Somalia?
I think they're strong enough to kick out Al-Shabaab. The Al-Shabaab doesn't control any more swaths of land. They don't have any more elaborate training centers. They don't have any more bases to come out and cause a lot of harm. What you see today in Al-Shabaab is doing, and the ones who are similar to Al-Shabaab, both in Somalia and Kenya, is looking for soft targets. How do you defend a hotel that's open for public, that's supposed to bring more people in?
Business.
A business.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And how do you defend a university? A university is a universal place where children have to think and be free and sleep when they want to and wake up when they want to and learn what they want to and oppose what governments when they want. So you're looking for to cause the most damage to communities, but not to to have an end in itself. So I don't think Al-Shabaab is strong. Al-Shabaab is has elements of it or all of it that that want to cause harm and want to create problems for the East Africa communities.
Abdu Salam Omer is the Somalian foreign minister. He spoke with me from Washington. Meanwhile, the Kenyan government has attributed recent terror attacks in the country to the presence of Somali refugees at the sprawling Dadaab camps, a claim denied by the refugees. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf reports from Dadaab in northern Kenya.
Kenyan officials and security authorities have called for the Dadaab refugee camps in the country's north to be closed and its population sent back to liberated areas under the control of African Union forces and the Somali government. Kenyan leaders have insisted Somalia's Islamist militant group Al-Shabaab uses refugee camps to train and plan attacks in the country. Mohamed Olo Odoa is a security chairman at Ifo Camp, one of the five camps in Dadaab. He says whoever says Al-Shabaab trains in the camps is insulting the Kenyan government and its security apparatus. He says people in the camp live between three police stations. The person who has said that there are people who are trained in this camp, that is a person who is embarrassing the Kenyan government and its security forces. This is not a place that can hide someone and train militias. Odoa, who is also the spokesman for the security committee of the Dadaab camps, knows that like any other town in the country, bad and good people visit the camps and the government must weed out the criminals. President Uhuru Kenyatta's government is under pressure to do something about the worsening of the security situation. In early April, fighters from Al-Shabaab stormed Garissa University College in northeast Kenya, killing 148 people, mostly students. Politicians from that region have vowed to help the central government with information about militant group activities. Hassan Mohamed, a youth in the Dadaab refugee camp, says Kenyan political leaders are shifting the blame to refugees because there is no one to defend them.
If you're a politician, the only person you can attack is the innocent ones, the ones who cannot defend themselves, who are innocent, who are refugees, who are powerless, who stays in a very muddy and dirty area and very dark area. So as a politician, you cannot say it is me who was behind this, but you have to say there are people who are living under you or under Kenya.
In the recent attack on Garissa University College, investigators revealed four of the attackers were Kenyans, one of them the son of a Mandera local chief, and two were from Western Kenya. Authorities said they believe the fourth was from the coastal city of Mombasa. Some camp residents admit warring groups in Somalia take advantage of the desperate situation in the refugee camps and recruit young people. Kamil Adan is an Islamic school teacher for more than 20 years in a Dadaab refugee camp. He says the education of many children is poor and some of those who fail return to Somalia. He says Somalis are people who move freely a lot in and out of the country. It is possible when some people could not manage to get education and decided it's better to go back and join either of the warring groups in Somalia. I cannot say it is so and so, but when they go back, they become what the people are in the country. Since December, more than 2,000 refugees have voluntarily returned to their countries, and many more are registering with the UN's refugee agency, UNHCR, after facing huge pressure from the Kenyan government. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Dadaab, Northern Kenya.
In Burundi, the capital city is reportedly calm. Earlier Sunday, at least two protesters were shot dead in clashes with police in Bujumbura. Witnesses say the protests escalated over a bid by the president to seek a third term. Felicine Caesar is a Bujumbura-based lawyer. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached him there for an update on the situation.
The situation is becoming a little bit normal. Right now, I'm coming from one of the quarters where the situation was very hard, but now it's okay. We can go even through the road. The people have gone back to their homes, except in one area called the Musaga, which is the east of Bujumbura.
We understand two people were shot dead and several others were injured as police tries to enforce a ban on demonstrations. Are the protesters, you think, are they going to give up their protests?
According to what some different registrations are saying, there are not even but three people are reported dead now. I don't know exactly what the protesters think, but now the situation has become calm, except in one area where, according to some different radio stations, the protestation is still going on in Musaga, but less intensive than before.
Now, these events, do you think they will affect the peace deal that has enabled Burundi to have some stability in the last 10 years?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so, but because when you see the people who called on people for protestations, these are from civil society organizations and some politicians from opposition, but they are very minority. Even looking at the people who went for protestations, considering the whole city of Bujumbura, there are only mainly three quarters, which are known mainly to belong to the opposition, and also which are homes to the bosses of civil society organizations. So this is an event that is far away from putting Burundi back in the, considering the peace process that we have started.
Felicine Caesar is a lawyer based in the Burundian capital, Bujumbura. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Impuga. This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Flotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Segun Adeyemi from the Nigerian commercial capital, Lagos, and music from our African collection. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sport, and for that, let's go to Nigeria and join Segun Adeyemi. Good evening, Segun.
Good evening, Peter, and good evening, Africa. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports for Sunday, April 26th. Let's kick off with African football news. Sierra Leone and Mauritania have walked over their opponents, the first-round qualifiers for the 2015 CAF Under-23 Championship. The countries advanced to the second round of the qualifiers after their opponents pulled out. In the first leg first round, Sierra Leone was built to take on Guinea-Bissau, while Mauritania was scheduled to play Libya. However, in the matches played in the qualifiers on Saturday, Rwanda scored a 2-0 comfortable win over Somalia, while Botswana shocked Kenya 3-0. Return leg matches will be played on the weekend of May 8th to 10th. The qualifying series will decide the participating teams in the 2015 CAF Under-23 Championship. The tournament, which is organized by the Confederation of African Football, is for the Under-23 national teams of the Confederation's member associations. A total of 8 teams will play in the final tournament, to be hosted by Senegal from December 5th to 19th. The final tournament is also a qualifier for the football event of the 2016 Olympics in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. The top 3 teams at the CAF tournament will fly the African flag at the Olympics. Turning to beach soccer, the victorious Malagasy team at the recent African Beach Soccer Championship in Seychelles is back home. The players and their officials were given a hero's welcome at a reception in the capital, Antananarivo. Madagascar beat Senegal 2-1 on penalties to win its first ever continental silverware. In a speech, the sports minister commended the players and the officials for lifting high the flag of Madagascar. The team later toured the headquarters of the Malagasy Football Federation. The team is expected to call on the President of the Republic upon his return from a trip abroad. Madagascar and Senegal will represent Africa at the FIFA Beach Soccer World Cup in Portugal from July 9th to 19th, 2015. In African club football news, Kaizer Chiefs have wrapped up the 2014-2015 South African Premier League title with 3 matches remaining. The club won its first league crown since the 2012-2013 season thanks to a 4-1 thumping of Polokwane City last Wednesday in Johannesburg. Rival Mamelodi Sundowns was held to a 1-1 draw in Pretoria by Platinum Stars. The victory took Kaizer Chiefs' tally to 63 points, 15 more than Sundowns, whose 4 remaining games can only guarantee 12 points. It is the 4th title for the Kaizer Chiefs, known as the Amakosi, in the Premier Soccer League era. The club will now return to the CAF Champions League next year after crashing out in the round of 16 of the current 2015 edition. In athletics, Kenyan and Ethiopian runners won the men's and women's titles at the London Marathon today, Sunday. In the men's race, Eliud Kipchoge won a thrilling battle with his fellow Kenyan Wilson Kipsang over the final kilometers by 5 seconds, coasting home in 2 hours, 4 minutes, and 42 seconds. Another Kenyan, world record holder Dennis Kimeto, was unable to stay with the leading pair shortly after 35 kilometers. He started to drift back, but finished third in 2 hours, 5 minutes, and 50 seconds to make it an all-Kenyan men's podium. In the women's race, Ethiopia's Tigis Tufa ended Kenya's 4-year domination with a surprise victory in 2 hours, 23 minutes, and 22 seconds. Tufa became the first Ethiopian women's champion since Deratu Tulu in 2001. Back to football news. 4-time African Footballer of the Year Yaya Toure is still happy at Manchester City in the English Premier League. Club manager Manuel Pellegrini said this despite reports that the Ivorian midfielder is keen to leave at the end of the year. Toure sparked a fresh round of speculations over his future this past week when he said he was open to new challenges. Finally, boxing. It is just 6 days before what has been labeled the most lucrative fight in boxing history. The fight at the MGM Grand Garden Arena will pitch Floyd Mayweather Jr. of the United States against Filipino Manny Pacquiao. Mayweather is currently undefeated as a professional and is a five division world champion. For his part, Pacquiao is the first and only eight division world champion. The fight is expected to generate around $400 million in ticket sales and global TV revenue. Mayweather is expected to earn $150 million, while Pacquiao is guaranteed $100 million. Tickets cost from $1,500 to around $11,000. But the most expensive seat, a fifth row ringside view, was priced at $77,500. And the get-in price, or the cheapest ticket to attend the event, was selling for nearly $4,500 on Thursday. Mayweather and Pacquiao's welterweight titles will be on the line. That ends it for this weekend's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Thanks a lot for listening. I'm Segun Adeyemi in Lagos. Now sending it back to Peter Clotty in Washington.
Thanks a lot, Segun. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent.
Umemjinga ni mimi, minaitunza wenzangu wanachukua. Ai, oh mapenzi, oh mapenzi linifanya kamtoto nilie vibaya. Mie siwezi, walo nikuta wenyashe niseme jina. Oh mapenzi, yali nifanya kamtoto nilie vibaya. Na ina mingi, ya menika moyoni.
Nataka kulewa,
minataka kulewa.
Yeah.
body na wire. If my body na elele, I be the one you require. Oh yeah, ele for me, that's it for me. Let them know say that you happy for this. Ele for me, that's it for me. Let them know say your body elele. Oh ele, oh ele, oh ele. If your body na wire, I could be your supplier. Oh ele, oh ele, oh ele. If your body na wire, then I could be your supplier. Hello, Mr. Wire. Wire. What is your heart desire? Wire. I'm ready to flex. What is your name? Me, I be a man, Naira. There is no need to holla. I no come for your Naira. Just L.A. for me, L.A. for me. Then I will be your supplier. If your body go, then my body go. It go be like Medigo. Oh, baby, what I go? If your body go, then my body go. It go be like Medigo. Oh, baby, what they go? If your body na elele, my body na wire. If my body na elele, I be the one you require. Oh yeah, elele for me, that's it for me. Let them know say that you happy for this. Elele for me, that's it for me. Let them know say your body elele. Oh elele, oh elele. If your body na wire, I could be your supplier. Oh elele, oh elele. If your body na wire.
I go Calabar, I see girls with a cabrio. You dash your body, I go Bola for Lagos. Call her I see, say I don't have to go club. Where are the babies? Baby, they call say I did club. I say she's me for if not, now me they sing song. I'm bad like King Kong. He ain't Calabar. He ain't Calabar.
No, you're a piece of work again. I'm gonna want say you're a lost. A lost car. A lost. A lost car. I am motor, yeah, the motor, for motor, nika, yeah, the car. For confident citizen, I shall go faster. Abanaya. Why? Because I'm under on sometimes I funk a kid on skin. I'm a danko. Let's go. Pass it away. Pass it away. Yeah, they are. Pass it away. Pass it away. Found on a job center. I'm in the air, a quavo. Yeah, never know. No, yeah. Yeah, tell me, no, yeah.
I go Calabar, I see girls with a cabrio. You dash your body, I go Bola for Lagos. I call her SD, say I don't have to go club. Where are the babies? Say me the call, say I did club. I say she's me for you. Sing it up, baby. I mean they sing song. I'm fast like King Kong. Hey, Calabar.
Get up on my lock, it is easy, girlie.
I desire.
Oh, my pino pino baby. Ay.
Fire, fire.
Good old girl, I want to love for me.
Let me give you my jacuzzi.
My jacuzzi, hey. Sandy.
Oh, you're pulling my tune on my body.
My jacuzzi, hey. Sandy.
Oh, my best in a jacuzzi.
My jacuzzi,
oh, mommy.
Sandy.
I just want to take you on a cruise.
Micha micha micha, dance ya dance ya burugawa. Oma licha micha micha, dance ya parugawa.
Oh baby, me looking so beautiful. It's driving me crazy. Oh no, biko but I no medical. She dey kill me. Oh na na. Chop on my lock and you be
girly.
Oh, my pino pino baby.
Fire.
Good old girl, I want to love for me.
Let me give you my jacuzzi.
My jacuzzi, hey, that's the sun.
Boy, I pull my tune on my body. Like I'm by a bulky holy always. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
tell you my love, no be counterfeit. The way you bust my brain, I dey bounce on it. I dey tell you my love, no be mistake. Oh, I dey go fall for the mistake. Oh,
I'm happy now, happy now, baby.
Are you gonna dance, you? If I show you my money, are you gonna dance, you? If I show you the way, are you gonna dance, you? If I show you my pockets, baby, are you gonna dance, you? If I show you my wallet, I will show you the money, baby, dance from you, baby, move from you, don't go from you. I will show you the money, baby, dance from you, show me your body, don't go from you. African, 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 baby. African, 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 baby. I don't, yeah. The money too much, I'm dashing. Are you feeling my singing? Like whatever you're thinking. Can't you see what I'm feeling? Lagos to Dubai. Abuja to Mozari. Go back to Mumbai. Now we see music that wants to dance to. Are you gonna dance, yo? If I show you my money. Are you gonna dance, you? If I show you the way, are you gonna dance, you? If I show you my pocket, baby, are you gonna dance, you? If I show you my wallet, I will show you the money, baby, dance from you, baby, move from you, don't go from you. I will show you the money, I will, baby, dance from you, show me your body, don't go from you. Give me any money more, baby, give me all your love. Need me money more. I don't go take your love for granted. Every day if I go to, every girl I just say go. Don't let my mind stop on you.
Is that my mommy the beauty name?
Oh, my baby, ladies, it's a cocoa butter. Yeah. You're fresh in my skin like a cocoa butter. Your baby, ladies, it's a cocoa butter. My cocoa butter. My cocoa butter.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa. Here are the English service of the Voice of America. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's One Man's Point of View with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Good evening, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Owing to the recent xenophobic attack against African immigrants in South Africa, particularly in Durban and Johannesburg, President Jacob Zuma felt obliged to cancel his plans to attend the Asia-African Summit in Indonesia. Indonesia has become the mecca of the non-aligned movement. In the city of Bandung in 1955, the giants of Asia, Africa, and Latin America met to map out their position in view of the hostile alliances in Europe. NATO, North Atlantic Treaty Organization, led by the United States, and the Warsaw Pact, the Socialist Military Alliance, led by the then Soviet Union. The Bandung Conference enunciated the principle of neutrality and pledged that they would not join either the NATO or Warsaw Pact. When the Western countries criticized the notion of neutrality in this context, the concept of non-alignment was born. Now, when the Africans gained independence in the 1960s, decade of decolonization, they welcomed the non-aligned movement, and it was used as a diplomatic tool in the United Nations in particular to promote further decolonization in Africa and the Pacific and in Latin America, as well as fight against apartheid in South Africa promote the independence of Namibia and also economic development. It was therefore not surprising that the Western countries were tormented by what they considered the vitriol comments of non-aligned leaders against the West. They perceive non-alignment as closer to the Soviet bloc than to the West. In this situation, at the end of the Cold War in 1989, the Western powers sought to seek the disbandment of the non-aligned movement. Two of their main allies, Egypt and Argentina, in the ministerial meeting which met in Accra, Ghana, in September 1991, requested that owing to the end of the Cold War, the movement should be disbanded. The response in the Accra ministerial was firm. They welcomed the end of the Cold War and the reconciliation between East and West. They welcomed the disbandment of the Warsaw Pact, but recognized that NATO has not been disbanded. And they said when NATO disbands, then the non-aligned movement will also disband. The 10th summit meeting of the non-aligned movement, which met in Jakarta, Indonesia, in September 1992, reaffirmed the ministerial decision of the Accra meeting. Now it is clear to see that it was a wise decision taken at that meeting, because today NATO is reinforcing its forces in light of the events in Ukraine and Crimea, and also the Soviet Union, or now the Russia as it's called, is trying to mobilize allies to confront this insurgency in NATO that has moved much eastwards to the Soviet border since the end of the Cold War. The non-aligned movement remains a vital force still in the United Nations, and in the meeting which is now going on, just ended in Jakarta, many of the African leaders were calling for the strengthening of the United Nations, particularly the General Assembly, to give them more voice, and also a reform of the Security Council. So the non-aligned movement is alive, and the Africans are happy about that. I thank you.
Thank you very much. That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor Shaka Sali, Reporter Douglas Impuga, Producer Odette Frazier, Sports Editor Segun Ademi, and our engineer for today, Brian Makulia, we say thanks for joining us. And as the elders say, water is colorless and has an insipid taste, but you can live on it longer than eating food. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
One of the greatest obstacles to development in much of the Caribbean basin is energy. It is too expensive and carbon intensive. That is why energy was one of the main topics of discussion during President Barack Obama's recent meeting in Jamaica with Caribbean Community, or CARICOM, leaders. The United States can be a very constructive partner in addressing these issues, said President Obama, after a meeting with Jamaican Prime Minister Portia Simpson Miller. Oftentimes, people of the Caribbean, despite having less resources, are paying significantly higher prices for energy. And if we can lower those costs through the development of clean energy and increased energy efficiency, we could unleash, I think, a whole host of additional investment and growth. And I think there are going to be a whole host of areas where the United States can be helpful. Electricity rates represent a major expense for Caribbean countries, many of which are highly dependent on energy-intensive industries such as tourism. With the fall in the costs of photovoltaic, wind, and other renewable energy systems, viable options now exist to substitute for existing systems and meet growing energy needs. That is why President Obama announced new projects and initiatives that will support the Caribbean Energy Security Initiative, a program that aims to help Caribbean countries transition to cleaner, more affordable, and sustainable energy production through improved governance, increased access to finance, and greater donor coordination. The United States plans to launch a $20 million facility to encourage investment in clean energy projects. The United States, along with Caribbean and Central American leaders, will also build on the recent announcement by the U.S. Overseas Private Investment Corporation, or OPIC, and will focus a team on Central America and Caribbean clean energy project opportunities. OPIC has already announced its finance support for two projects, a 20-megawatt solar farm and a 36-megawatt private sector wind farm, both in Jamaica. Complementing the new financing facility, the United States, CARICOM, and Central America will field a task force to identify ways to advance energy sector reform, regional integration, and clean energy development. Caribbean countries are particularly vulnerable to the effects of climate change, and we have to act now, said President Obama. Large countries and small countries have to work together, because without collective action, we're not going to be able to address these challenges.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.